I was 5 until 14 when they finally got divorced. I had my first drink of booze when I think I was 10 at a quinceañera. And our families just could not get along. My dad's family couldn't get along with each other. My mom's families couldn't get along with each other. And heaven forbid that we got shipped to either side of our families, because I would take a butt whipping from either side. Sometimes I deserved it, sometimes I didn't. So, which made me a very angry person. As a matter of fact, I hated my dad and I hated my mom. I hated living with them. I had to go by their rules or I could move. So by the time I was 12, I got my first job as a paper boy. And I would save up my money so I was able to do what I wanted to do, go roller skating, buy my own clothes that I wanted. And they used to say, well, when you're 14, you get to grow your hair as long as you want. And back then, back in 74, you wanted to have long hair. And one day, my mom said, well, your hair's a little, you know, a little scraggly. Let me just do a little trim on it. And I said, no, I don't want you to. I go, I want to let my hair grow long. She goes, oh, no. She goes, no. She goes, I'll make it look like Mick Jagger's, like that picture right there. I thought, oh, okay, sure, okay, if you can do that, sure. Well, she lied, and I ended up with a buzz cut. So then I was really hating her for a while about it. And in between, her and my dad were arguing back and forth. They both found their second husbands and wives, and they sort of put us out of the light, me and my sister. So I had to take care of my sister while my mom and my dad worked. And back then, I lived in Buena Park, and we had a yard that was 3/4 acre. And I had to mow that lawn every week with a push mower to make sure everything was nice and neat, which I started to hate even more. I couldn't tell them how I felt. I still have problems telling people how I feel, but I really resented them. So by the time I graduated, when they said, you go by our rules or you're out, I was working at night as a janitor and going to school in the daytime. And I had enough credits to where I could graduate my senior year in the first half with no problems. And but I decided I was going to screw around the second half of the season because, you know, I did all the work. And that's when I started to dabble in drugs. And it became a constant thing of doing drugs. For the longest time, I didn't care about anybody, didn't care about my parents. My sister had moved up to San Francisco because she couldn't handle the situation of our parents. So she went to live with an aunt. And I went and got my own apartment. So when you're 17, 18 years old and you got your own apartment, of course, all your friends are going to come down and all they're going to want to do is party. And party we did. And we partied so much that, truthfully, I don't remember most of the 80s. Only thing about the 80s I remember is Miami Vice, Van Halen, and Led Zeppelin somewhat, and I continued to do drugs. And it was my way of comforting me and keeping my anger in check, because my anger is a bad thing. I could snap and I would be in a fight in a heartbeat to back up a friend or just because my day was bad. Finally, the turning point was once my girlfriend had our first child. Once Michael was born, I thought, okay, I'm going to sober up, which I did sober up. And I thought to myself, this is a good thing, but the mother of my sons liked to cheat when I was at work. So I had no clue she was cheating on me until her sister told me. So, which made me even more angry. And so these guys that she would start dating, they would be around my boys, and I didn't like them. So I was putting them through tables. I was beating them up big time. I couldn't stop myself. So I decided to put myself into anger management. I did it on myself, without the cops, without the judge. I just did it myself, and I was in anger management 6 months, almost a year, on my own. And it helped calm me down a lot, but I still had my issues with my anger, and I still had my issues with drugs, because if anything set me off, still, it was like, well, where's the joint? Let me get high. It'll calm me down. It'll bring me back down. I'll be okay. And it took one day just walking to a church, and I ran into this pastor who knew who I was. I had no clue who he was. And he told me about my whole life. And that scared me completely. He knew me like he knew the back of his hand. And I'd never seen this guy before in my whole life. So he came up to me during the service, and he stopped everything he's doing in the service. And he goes, Mike, he goes, Jesus wanted me to tell you that he loves you and he forgives you. And I thought to myself, it's like, whoa, wait a second. I got to get out of here, you know. But I said, you know, I have these big, dark, black sunglasses on. And tears are coming out, and I'm just trying not to really lose it big time in front of, there's about 100 people there, trying not to lose my cool. And I said, thank you. I'll take that under advisement. And he touched me. He put his hands on my shoulders, and all of a sudden, like 10,000 pounds of sin just like left. And I hit the floor, and I don't remember anything. I hit the floor, and I guess people sort of freaked out and, you know, are you okay? Are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. So I'm just waiting for this meeting to end. And I'm looking at both of the exits. I'm looking around because I'm thinking, I am out of here. I don't want nothing to do with this. I got to get out of here. So I decided to go out the back door. The pastor's standing there, and he goes, you know, Mike, he goes, we've never met, have we? I go, no. He goes, Jesus told me that you were coming here. He described what you were wearing down to your black sunglasses. And he goes, why don't you take my hand and let's pray, and why don't you see if you'd like to receive Christ in your life. So I said, sure, okay, no problem. I just wanted to get out of there. Okay, so we did the prayer, and all of a sudden, about another 50,000 pounds just left of stress and sin and all this bad stuff that I had been doing in my life didn't seem to matter anymore. And at the time, I wasn't working, so I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? And the pastor said, hey, I could use some help around this church. Do you know how to paint? I go, yeah, sure, I know how to paint. He goes, can you help me paint the church, inside the church? I said, sure. So I spent a lot of time with this pastor painting the church, the inside, the outside, whatever needed to be done, I would do it. And I had a problem still that I still like to dabble. I still like to dabble in weed. I still like to dabble in drinking. So I had to confess that to the pastor, which was very hard to do. And he turned to me and he said, we're all sinners. Nobody's perfect. Only Jesus is. So he goes, I understand. He goes, it's up to you on which path you're going to take. And a few months went by, and I still attended his church, and I would still help out. And then they thought of, hey, there's a program called Celebrate Recovery. We would like you to attend it with us. And I said, okay, that sounds fine. He goes, we'd like to start it at our church. So I went to the program, which in turn I ended up going to Saddleback and receiving some teaching under Rick Warren, and was in the classes over there for 6 months. And then our church decided to put Celebrate Recovery over there. Once we got it up and running, about 6 months later, 7 months later, I receive a phone call, and I'm like up here on the stage doing the announcements and stuff. And they go, you got an emergency phone call. Well, the mother of my boys tried to commit suicide. And they called, and CPS called me up and said, you need to get here. You need to get here now. Otherwise, we're going to put your kids in a foster parent's house. And I said, whoa. I live 500 miles, 400 to 500 miles away. I go, you're going to have to give me at least till tomorrow afternoon. I can be there first thing in the afternoon. I go, I'm on stage right now. I'm preaching. And they said, okay, we'll give you till 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Otherwise, we're going to put them in a foster home. So I went there and I got my boys. Then all of a sudden, my anger issues started coming back into focus because I was very upset that I had to walk away from what I was doing with Celebrate Recovery, and we had just started and it was going really good, and I had to step down. And if it wasn't for my boys and the looks in their eyes when I walked up, and the hugs that I got from them, because they were both really totally scared. I was scared too. I was scared for them. I was scared for me, because I thought to myself, it's like, I have no work here. I know no one here. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do? You know, I had just moved out of my house because my stepdad died. I had supposedly inherited a house, but under certain guidelines of a California law, my stepbrothers got the house because that was my stepdad's real sons. And so if you're a stepchild, you don't get anything. So they got my house that my mom bought, and I was really seething, really hurt, because I thought to myself, where am I going to take these boys? You know, I live in a 50, an over community, and luckily God put me in Needles for a while, and I got a job there, and being a maintenance man, doing painting. But that's just a part of what's been going on in my life, and that's all I have to say at the moment. And thank you for listening.